Hey, if you enjoyed my episode on IEPs and you want to listen to more podcast episodes about IEPs, I want to tell you about another podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. You might have heard me talk about IEPs on my episode, and this latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I checked out these episodes, and I think that they are a great place for you to go after listening to mine. They go into a little more detail and answer a little more in depth about what an IEP is and whether your child needs one. So listen to Understood Explains by searching for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Hello, you sentient ball of stardust. Welcome to Struggle Care. I'm your host, Casey Davis, and I am here in the studio today with Heather Stockton, who is a content creator, a dance teacher, and we are here to talk about accessible dance. And Heather, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for having a conversation with me.
So I want to hear some more about your background, but before I ask that, I just wanted to tell the world kind of how I found you on TikTok.
Oh, okay.
I was like scrolling my FYP and one of your dance videos came on.
Oh.
And you were doing like, I mean, I'm going to show my ignorance of like dance, but it was almost like it was really sped up. It was like a pop and lock looking situation. Is that close to accurate?
Sure. Yeah.
And it was so cool and it was so entertaining. And but it was a response video because somebody had commented, "You're not really moving that fast. You sped up the video," or something. And you made a response video where you were like, "Yeah, that wasn't a secret. Like, I'm not trying to pull one over on you."
Right.
And you talked about how, like, that's the medium.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so interesting, this idea that, like, in today's world, dance is about more than just what your body does in that moment. It's also these combinations of, it's also about expression, and that you can layer other things like technology onto it to create this product of expression that is in fact still authentic dance. And I thought that that was kind of an interesting segue into what we're talking about today. So tell me a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm thinking about this morning, thinking about our conversation today, and dance has really been the true love of my life. It's been like my lifetime partner. My dad said that I started choreographing dances when I was 3 in my mom's backyard. And I just was always dancing at school during recess. I made my best friend, Marissa, make up dances with me during recess. I started traditionally training at a dance studio when I was 4 and continued within that route until I was 17. So a competitive dance studio. Danced on my high school team and really found a sense of belonging and community in the dance team that I didn't really feel in the competitive studio route. We can talk about why not later, but I guess I was on a quest to feel that sense of belonging. And when I went into college, I discovered the art form of dance and how dance can be a means of communication, storytelling, expressiveness, and the craft of choreography just really kind of grabbed my heart in an exciting way when, you know, we're first entering college and the whole world is at our feet. And I decided then and there that I wanted to be a choreographer for the rest of my life and be an advocate for dance. I auditioned for a private arts college, didn't get in, because I think what the letter said was, you know, "Heather, technically, artistically, spiritually, you have everything we're looking for in this dance program, but it's because of your excessive weight that we cannot allow you in." And that, you know, it wasn't my first time feeling discrimination because of my body size. I remember when I was 8 years old, I was told I couldn't dance with my friends in this specific dance because I was too chubby and I needed to lose weight. And when I received that rejection from the private arts college, it just kind of compounded this feeling of like, well, why not me? I love dancing with every fiber of my being, and I know that I could be right for this program, but just because of my weight, which could be argued, you know, for someone who may be underweight, that is
Well, and we know that that happens all the time in the dance world. And so I always find it interesting that the line of, like, when people talk about it being about health, it's like, is it? Because I've seen some pretty unhealthy weights in the other direction, like of women that are not eating and men that are not eating. Heather, that's such a powerful story. As an aside, I'm going to ask a question. You don't have to answer it. I'm actually asking it so that I can go back and splice it in between your answer just to really emphasize your answers. So you teach, we're going to talk about accessible dancing, but I want, in your own personal story, what was kind of your first experience with dance not being accessible?
Such a good question. And
it's okay. You don't have to answer it. I'm going to splice your really powerful answer about the acceptance letter. Yes. But if you have anything else that you want to say about it, like, well, it's true. Like, I think off the dome, like, it's totally, at least in a professional sense, not accessible to people that don't have the specific body type that dancing places are looking for.
Right. I think that is the biggest misconception, because who gets to decide, you know, who has access to dance, right? And I, you know, it could really go back to systemic problems that I feel like all funnel into white supremacist cultural norms. And really, dance belongs to everyone. Dance is in every form of culture. And oftentimes, those who are gatekeeping, you know, are trying to withhold this idea of dance as this elite art form, which to me is so much more. It's a given right for every body, for every person.
It's interesting because I have a theater degree. And when I was in college, you know, the theater department and the dance department were like arm in arm. You know what I mean? Like, they were separate. They had their separate classes, but like they overlapped a lot, you know? And, you know, a dance student often would audition for shows, especially if there's a lot of dance involved. And I worked in the costume department. We would often costume the dancers. And one of the things that I think is so interesting is that when it comes to theater, it's like we had white kids, Black kids, Pakistani kids, you know, we had men, women, we had skinny kids, fat kids, we had kids in between, we had kids that were able-bodied, we had kids that were disabled, we had, like, it was like there was a space, and I don't think theater is great at this, I'm just saying in comparison, it was like we had lots of different types of people and types of bodies, because plays were about the real world, right? So you needed old people and young people and this, that, and the other, right? Like, you know, we did a show that featured a disabled lead. Like, so it was like it's okay to source the way that people actually look in the world, because plays are about actual people, even if they're fictional. And it's interesting to me looking over at the dance department where it's like, is dance not supposed to be doing the same? Is dance not supposed to be about the real world?
Right.
Like, it's this one body type that we want expressing very human things that dance is intended to expression. And I always thought that was interesting.
That is my mission in life, Casey, is making dance accessible and inclusive for all bodies. Everybody can dance. And breaking down the stigma that's connected to it, that it's just one body type. And, you know, going back to TikTok, that's one of the many beauties of a TikTok community, is that you get to actually see all bodies dancing and celebrating each other. And it's been so powerful to be a part of that community and just see beyond, you know, what has been kind of our limited visibility of dance in the States and around. But as I've like expanded my own possibility of dance, of course, like I see so many versions and so many different ways of building community and having all bodies represented and feel like they have access. And going back to when I got denied from the private arts college, my partner got into the college. So we did end up moving to that state. And within 5 years, I had opened doors for myself, made things happen for myself. And as a graduate from the private arts college, I was doing basically everything that a professional choreographer and dancer could do at that time without having the degree or the access that college would have given me, because I demanded it for myself. And I put myself out there and auditioned for dance companies and let my passion and my talent really speak for itself, rather than like saying, I shouldn't do this because I look a certain way.
Shout out to Claritin for giving me some free samples and for sponsoring this podcast. I am a seasonal allergy sufferer, which means that sometimes I'm lying in bed reading a book that is super happy and my husband says, "What's wrong? Why are you crying?" Because I am sniffling and he thinks I'm crying. But no, it's just seasonal allergies. Luckily, that does not happen anymore because I use Claritin D. We can live Claritin clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sniffing, sneezing, watery eyes, itchy nose and throat. It's great. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. As for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter, you don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin clear. Use as directed. I still remember where I was the first time it hit me. I maybe do have ADHD. And it's funny, I posted a TikTok the other day about having ADHD, and a good friend of mine texted me and said, "Remember when you swore to me you didn't have ADHD?" Oh, goodness. Well, listen, if you relate to that at any point in your life, I want to share a podcast that you should tune into. It's called ADHD Aha, hosted by Laura Key. It's candid stories from people who share the moment it clicked that they or someone they know has ADHD. In each episode, you'll hear heartfelt interviews about the unexpected, emotional, and even funny ways that ADHD symptoms can surface for adults. And it doesn't always look the way we thought it would. So check it out. To listen to ADHD Aha, search for ADHD Aha in your podcast app. That's ADHD Aha, with Aha spelled A-H-A. When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is the exquisitely observed memoir of an idealistic young neurosurgeon attempting to answer the question, what makes a life worth living, as he deals with his own terminal cancer diagnosis. It's a stunning reminder to live while we're alive, a must-read for anyone in medicine, from a doctor turned patient. For healthcare workers, expand your view on patient care and the fragile beauty of our mortal lives through Kalanithi's unforgettable words. Some of the questions Kalanithi wrestles with in this book include, what makes a life worth living in the face of death? What do you do when the future flattens out into a perpetual present? When the future no longer is a ladder towards your goals in life? What does it mean when you have a child to nurture a new life as another fades away? When Breath Becomes Air is a number one New York Times bestseller, Pulitzer Prize finalist, and was named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times Book Review, People, NPR, The Washington Post, Slate, and more. When Breath Becomes Air is available wherever books are sold. Learn more at prh.com/breath.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
So, and that kind of leads us to what you do today. So tell us about your job now.
Yes. So I am a dance educator. I have worked at the same elementary school for the last 7 years, and I came to the elementary school because I was in partnership with the nonprofit organization I worked at called Luna Dance Institute. I'm no longer with the organization as I have been hired full-time by the elementary school because the teachers and the administrative staff really advocated for me to be hired on as one of their full-time teachers. And what I've done is developed a fully fledged dance program, one of only two in Oakland, California. And what that means basically is that every child at this school has dance. And this school is a historically Black school, majority Black students, and a third of the school population is special ed or special needs community. And really, what I have been developing for the last 7 years with this dance program is access and inclusion. And instead of teaching a traditional dance style, I prefer to really embed radical pedagogy into my curriculum, which means that every child has a right to freedom and liberatory education through creativity and constructivism, learning through play. So to break down dance, basically, it's moving your body through space with a sense of time, rhythm, and energy and expression. And
that's really powerful. I don't think I've ever heard someone give a definition of dance. And I certainly have never heard someone give a definition of dance that was universal, like that made me feel like I could do it. Or that anybody can do it. I mean, I assume that the students in your school that are disabled, that it's a range of disabilities, that there's physical disabilities, mental, emotional disabilities, probably some kids that are neurodivergent. And, you know, I was sort of reflecting on my experience in the like theater arts when it comes to disability. And like we had this one class called movement where we would learn all sorts of things, how to move basically. So there's like some juggling stuff. There's some like
stage fighting, how to fall and not hurt yourself. And there was a young man in our class that had a mobility disability. And so he was in a wheelchair. And there was this real effort to make the class inclusive for him, even though he couldn't do some of the physical moves we did. But what I found was interesting was that the inclusion was basically, you're going to participate in everything to the degree you can. And we're going to, like, the modification wasn't creative. It was like, okay, if we're throwing someone over our shoulder onto the ground, well, you can do the exact same move, but he won't go over your shoulder. He'll just go in front of you since you're sitting in your wheelchair. And it was like, okay, so we're like halfway there, right? Like, we're including, but it was almost like, we'll just pretend like it's really happening. When you're looking at it and you're like, but we could never actually put this on stage. It doesn't look real. It doesn't, you know, there's no like inclusion to the point where I hate when it feels like, okay, we're letting the disabled students do it and they can't really do it, but we're pretending like they can do the free throw and then we'll all cheer.
Right. You know, that frustrates me so much because for me, in my experience of teaching, all you have to do is ask them. It's as simple as that, is how would you do this? How would you like to do this? And when I'm teaching, I don't differentiate my curriculum from, you know, special needs to general ed. I teach in a way that's universal design for learning, so that through multiple modalities, through instruction, through like modeling and writing and visual resources, hopefully every student can find an entry point. And I teach in a way where I give them options. Like, I'll say like, oh, can you find a twisty, shaky dance with your upper body? So I'm not saying like, okay, do this specific movement that, you know, I can do. It's giving opportunities for every student to say like, well, maybe I don't have an arm. Maybe it doesn't feel good for me to move my upper body like that. So I'm going to find a different way to do it. And when you're just like doing it for the children, when you're just like kind of imposing, you know, this is the way that it should be, you're taking away their agency to find out for themselves. And through constructive learning, they really need to figure out these ways of creating and learning how to relate to each other in ways that are building their self-confidence and agency and learning for themselves and intrinsic motivation. And if in teaching and traditional curriculum and academics, I feel like there's this sense of only one way of being smart. And with dance, with the arts, there's an expanded range of possibility of so many different ways to show your intelligence. And that's through discovery of your own intelligence. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And you mentioned universal design. In case someone's listening that doesn't know what that means, it's really this concept that, you know, if we design for everyone, including people who are disabled, it will actually make the design better for everyone. Like, it will benefit everyone, right? So as simple as like, if a building is inclusive to a disabled person to get in, it actually makes it more accessible for even someone that is not disabled. Like, it makes it easier. It makes products better. It makes systems better. And I mean, I'm listening to you talk about it, and I think about how many kids that don't have a diagnosis but have a form of disability. And even kids that don't have a disability, I mean, I'm just thinking about myself, like, I'm so painfully Caucasian when it comes to dance that I was always embarrassed to participate in dance because I am not flexible. I hear rhythm really well, but I don't necessarily, like, I didn't have early childhood experiences with dance where I like know how to make my, can't like think of a way to move my body and make my body do it. You know what I mean? And I always wished that I had, because like when I would watch all of the students that were in the dance department, it just looks like it feels good. And I always wanted to do it, but I always felt like I missed the boat. Like, I can't be a beginner at my age. And if I am, I certainly don't want anyone to see me beginning, and I wouldn't know how to start. And if I did, I don't think I could do the like the right moves.
I hear you, Casey. And I think that that is how so many people feel, you know, and I hear, I mean, a lot of my comments on TikTok are saying what you just said, that you don't feel like you could belong, or that you don't feel like you would know where the entry point is, or that you're a beginner at your age. And that's really what I'm trying to just like break through to people, is that like, no, everybody can dance, and dance has so many benefits for your mental health, for your physical health, for your whole being, really. And speaking of early childhood, I know that in California right now, I live in California, there's, you know, advocates statewide are really trying to get dance into every early childhood program on top of elementary and secondary education, just so that children can have those embodied experiences at such an important time developmentally. But I want to say to you that, oh, you can just start with putting on some music and just like feeling what feels good for you. Like figuring out what does dance feel like for you and what really gets you going, and try to find a community that you can feel safe in expressing and trying it for yourself.
I wish that and not just with dance, but with everything. But I think there's something about the arts in particular. I wish that there were places that were more explicit about entry points for adults, because it's not hard to find a beginner's dance class for a child. But if you go to dance studios for adults, maybe you can find a beginner class. But what does beginner mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Beginner meaning I've been dancing tap my whole life and now I'm going to try beginner ballet, or
right.
I have never danced a day in my life, because it is so, the embarrassment of not knowing how to do something is really hard to get over, especially when you walk into a place and you go, okay, I want to learn how to do this, but I don't know where to begin. There's nothing worse than starting a class and you can't keep up,
mm-hmm.
or you don't understand the basics. And you're right. There's not a lot of people that will talk about, how do I find my way? And one of the things that I talked about in my book is this idea that movement in childhood started out as joyful.
Yeah.
Right? Playing tag, running after your dog. It was play. And then at some point, I blame PE class, which is what I say in my book, right? Which is we took a bunch of kids that loved to run around and play games, and we were run laps. Do push-ups and add all of the social dynamics into that, of how ashamed you feel about your body or your ability with all your peers, and it stripped the joy away. And I feel now we have all these adults that movement is a chore, right? It's exercise, it's go to the gym, it's do this. And it's how do we begin to get curious about how to get joy back into movement as an adult?
Yes, that part. Yeah. So when I'm teaching, and I'm not just talking about elementary now, I also teach at a studio here in Oakland. That is my main value as a teacher, is to center joy for everyone in the room, right? And joy can be different for everyone. Everyone is coming in with their own experiences. But if you create or hope to create a community and a space where the individual is seen as well as the whole, it goes into okay, well, what are your community building practices? How are you building trust in the space? And how are you helping to get people in a place where they can feel embodied and actually feel like they are ready to have fun with it again, and to be playful and have a sense of curiosity around it? And I always break down my classes in a way that it's okay, you come in, we meet each other, we get to know who's in the space. We go through the brain dance, a warm up. We explore different movement possibilities, and then we improvise with those possibilities. So then that brings in kind of problem solving and curiosity. And then there's a create aspect to class where you're creating and expressing and you share it with everyone. And then there's the connection of oh, this is what I saw you do. So you feel seen, you feel celebrated, and hopefully you feel like you had a joyful experience with dance.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who have still not been reunited. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called El Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, El Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. You can find the link to donate to El Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org alotrado.com/volunteer. That's alotrado. A few weeks ago, my husband's beloved grandfather died, and it's been a really sad time for our whole family. But one of the moments of light in this whole process was shortly after he passed away, I got an email from my mother-in-law, and she had sent all of us a link to his Storyworth book. I don't know if you're familiar with Storyworth, but I have a new appreciation for them now that we have a Storyworth book on my husband's grandfather. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story, long or short, it doesn't matter. And then you get emailed a copy of their response as they're submitted in the course of a year. You'll get to enjoy the retelling of their stories that you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before. And after that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. I am so grateful to my mother-in-law for doing this with her dad. We love it. Families love Storyworth. That's why it has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. So Mother's Day is coming up, and I want to give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you will cherish for years. Right now, save 10% on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/struggle. That's storyworth.com/struggle to save $10 on your first purchase. Whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day, or just because you know that sometimes time is short and you want to capture those memories.
Gosh, that is such a different, it sounds like such a different experience than anything I ever experienced, where you walk in and it's like, warm up, stretch your muscles, here are the moves. We're memorizing these moves, and there's an objective, like, right way to do the move and wrong way to do the move. But like, when you first told me about this, when you say like, you know, I'm not teaching technique, I'm teaching expression. And I thought, oh, okay. So like, even then I had an individualistic idea of it, right? Because like, there were times in theater where we'd be in movement class and they'd be like, okay, I'm going to put on some music and everyone just move how they feel right. Right? Like, okay, great. That's fine. I'll do that. But when you talk about marrying this idea of not just individual expression, but like the idea that you would present a problem and we would talk about the way the movement feels or what we want to express, and that there's this interacting with each other that builds the dance. I mean, that sounds like something I would really love to experience.
Yeah. You know, I've heard after classes from adults that they feel like they're healing their inner child and connecting with each other and creating with each other. It really gives this experience of, I just did something for myself, but also found a sense of community.
And there's learning to it. Like, I feel like in my mind, okay, if I go to this modern dance class, I can learn these techniques, but it's also very rigid. Whereas like, when I think of, oh, we're just teaching expression, I think of like, not a lot of room for growth. Cause like, sure, I can do that. Like, I can put music on and be like, okay, this is like how it feels to move. Okay, here I am moving. But how do you introduce challenge and growth? And like, how can this one way I feel like moving turn into something else? And then how can I pair it with other ways of moving? And then how can I put it together in a way that, you know, is interesting to me visually, not just the way it feels? And it occurs to me that I don't think I've ever heard someone lay that out. It's not just one or the other, right? It's not just we all learn the moves and we've created a piece, or loosey goosey, just like move how you feel. But like, how would you, you know what I mean? Like making that a growth experience where you're like getting outside of the bounds of just what you're doing in that moment.
Right. There's a science behind it. There's structure behind it. You know, actually, if you're open, could I lead you through a little brain dance? Okay, cool. So the brain dance was designed and created by Anne Green Gilbert, and she worked with neuroscientists to develop this foundation of moving that replicates the developmental patterns from infancy to 3 years old, of how you're basically moving and discovering the world around you. And basically, she broke down all those developmental patterns and made it a sequence so that early childhood all the way up to, you know, elders can do this and immediately find a way to ground themselves, have a sense of embodiment, clarity, improve cognition, and also expression. And so I do this as a warm up for every class. Okay. So it always starts with breath, comes back to breath. So let's just both take a moment and take a deep inhale, fill your lungs up with air, and a long, slow breath out. I like to put my hands on my belly to really feel my belly rise and fall. Inhale, belly rises. Exhale. To fall. You can even put your hands on the side of your rib cage and feel your ribs expand and contract on the inhale. Inhale, expand. Exhale to contract. Getting some oxygen to our brain, into our respiratory system. The next part is tactile, touch. So go ahead and give your whole body a squeeze, your arms, your fingers, the top of your head, temples, any place that you feel like might need a little extra love. And I'm sure you know this, but tactile sensation is a really grounding way to locate your body in space. Gets those proprioceptors firing. You can also move on to padding. So padding, you can choose your pressure. It can be light or hard, whatever you need today. Don't forget about your lower body and the backside. I always forget about the backside. And then we go into core distal. So stretching out from our core. I like to say you're stretching out like a starfish. So really reaching out through those limbs, your fingers, your legs, your toes, all the way out as far as you can stretch. And then you're going to contract and curl up around your core, kind of protecting it. So you're reaching out, opening, opening, opening. This is like a baby discovering the world around them. And then contract, curling into your core and learning how to protect yourself and having a sense of your core. And then we'll go into head tail. So this is activating the spine. And a simple way that you could do that is doing the snake, you know, the 90s snake where you're moving your head and then the tail follows side to side. So imagining your spine looking like a snake. Moving side to side. Another way you could do this is with cat-cow, arching and curving your back and your spine. So really finding that head-tail connection and opening up the juices, the spinal juices. All right, after we get our spine moving, we're going to go into the upper lower parts of our body. So upper body, this is what we use for our main means of expression. So let's see, find a point in your room to focus on and then reach towards it really slowly. It could be with your head, it could be with your arm, it could be with your chin, your shoulder. Just find a sense of reaching towards something. Nice, yes. And then find a different point and a different body part to reach toward it. So slowly reaching, feeling that sense of stretch and opposition. All right, now let's shake it up. Shaking, shaking, shaking your hands. Find a different body part to shake. Your upper body. And change to a different body part to shake. Shaking is so important. It helps us release whatever we're holding in our muscles. All those emotions and feelings literally moves it through our body. Gets it out. And then last, let's find a wave. A wave with your upper body. Could be slow waves, could be fast waves, squiggly lines, just a sense of undulation moving and coursing through your upper body. And then going down to the lower body. So lower body is all about grounding into the earth, transporting through the world. And I like to find circles in my lower body, so circling my ankles, circling my knees, finding a rotation, a circle in my hips. Mm-hmm. And then bringing down the shaking to your lower body too, so shaking your feet, shaking one leg, shaking both legs, shaking your hips. Shaking your knees. And I'm sitting down right now, but I'm bending my knees, just finding kind of like a way to access those quad muscles or like those big, strong leg muscles, just like giving them some love and letting the blood flow a little more strongly. So that's upper lower. The next part is body side. So thinking that you're dissecting your body with the zipper vertically and just focusing on one side of your body. This is a way that we can connect the two hemispheres of our brain. So think of maybe just spelling your name with your right side of your body any way you want. It could be your arms and your legs, spelling them in tandem. Just getting a way to get that right side of the body moving. And then moving over to the left side. You can shake, you can carve, you can make slashing movements, get some different kind of energy dynamic in it, or wiggle. All right, that's body side. Now we're going to go into cross lateral. And this is really helpful for my kids because it helps kids learn how to read, because it connects the hemispheres of the brain and works with tracking so that kids can really learn to cross over their body. So take your right hand, shake it, cross over and give your squeeze, your left ear squeeze. And then take your left hand, reach over your body, cross over, give your right ear squeeze. And then just keep doing that for yourself however you want, crossing over the body in different ways with your arms, with your legs, just crossing over that medium plumb line, allowing your brain to connect. And then the last one is my favorite, is vestibular. Woo, I call it dizzy time for my kids. And basically, you're just going to try to get as dizzy as you can to really set off your vestibular of your brain. And you can do, if you're sitting down, you can shake, shake, shake as hard as you can. You can go upside down. I like to turn or roll my body around. But just give your body a nice little dizzying practice. However, whatever that means to you, just try to get as dizzy as possible. And then when you're done, you'll feel that kind of fizzy, dizzy feeling of your body literally recalibrating and centering. Because sometimes we got to get off balance to remember what it feels like to be on balance, right? And let's just take one last breath together.
I feel so energized.
Yay! That's the hope, right? Yeah. That's the brain dance.
Oh my gosh. I truly feel like I have not moved my body in that many ways all at once since college.
Oh, we all got to do it.
I love it.
Yay.
I might start doing that every morning.
Great. I do it every morning and it really helps me start the day off with a clear mind and, you know, being in my body. And yay, I'm so glad.
That's awesome. And it's such a different focus in warming up than stretching, right? Like just the mechanical of making your muscles work.
Which, you know, you can, you know, lay in stretching as a part of like the lower body movements. And I do for my kids. It's really a practice of meeting yourself wherever you are that day and whatever truly feels good in the moment in a structured way.
Well, Heather, this was really compelling. And I had no idea I was going to get a mini lesson. So I really appreciate that. But can you tell people where they can find you online if they want to watch you dance?
Sure. You can find me on TikTok with Mixed Piggies Dance Club, MX_Piggies_Dance_Club. You can find me on Instagram at @heth_. My website is dancingwithheth.com. I teach at Flow House in Oakland, California, and at Grass Valley Elementary in Oakland Unified School District. And I am co-director of Wax Poets Dance Company and Sweet and Sour Productions.
Amazing. Well, Heather, thank you so much. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Casey.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.